A single phrase, you know, just spoken casually in a random Tuesday afternoon meeting, can actually unknowingly authorize massive corporate fraud.
Yeah, it's wild to think about.
It really is. So today we are diving into that silent, really treacherous gap between what a leader intends to say and the illegal actions an employee actually ends up taking.
Which is a huge blind spot for most companies.
Exactly. So for today's deep dive, we are pulling from this fascinating case study by Excellus, which is a compliance training organization.
Right.
And it details this dynamic between a regional VP named Dana and her sales rep, Marcus. It just perfectly captures how these high-performance environments can unwittingly breed catastrophic risk.
They absolutely can. And to really break this down, we're going to put on some specific professional hats today.
Yes, I love this approach. I am going to be acting as the leadership coach, so I'll be dissecting Dana's side of things, like her motivational misfire.
And I'll take the compliance expert role. So I'm going to unpack Marcus's rationalization, which is a very dangerous one, and look at the legal fallout.
Perfect. So the focus here really revolves around this Excellus concept of outcome pressure without guardrails.
Right, because we spend so much time analyzing complex compliance frameworks and financial regulations, right?
Well, constantly.
But honestly, the most significant organizational risks, they usually just originate from basic human communication under intense stress.
So to really understand how this happens, I think we need to just step right into the pressure cooker with them.
Let's do it. Set the scene.
Okay, so it is the Q3 quarterly review. Dana, the regional VP, is running the meeting, and her region is behind on their numbers.
Which is always a tense room to be in.
Oh, completely. And we all know how gravity works in the corporate world, right?
Mm.
Pressure from the executive board hits the senior VPs. They push it down to the regional VPs. And now Dana is passing that pressure directly onto the sales floor.
It just rolls right downhill.
Exactly. And the stakes are incredibly visible here. Two reps on her team have already missed quota for three consecutive quarters.
Oh, wow. Three quarters.
Yeah, three. So they are currently on performance improvement plans. Or PIPs.
Okay, that detail about the PIPs is so crucial for establishing the psychological environment in that room.
How so?
Well, I mean, a performance improvement plan in a lot of corporate sales cultures, it's widely interpreted as just the first step out the door.
Like a polite way of firing you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So the rest of the team is sitting in that room, actively watching their peers get managed out. The baseline anxiety is already operating at a 10 before Dana even opens her mouth.
Right. So they are terrified. And Dana looks at her team knowing she has to rally them, right? And she delivers this mandate. She says, I don't need explanations. I need closed deals. Whatever it takes to get there this quarter, make it happen. I'm counting on all of you.
Whatever it takes.
Now, wearing my leadership coach hat, I actually have to defend Dana's intent here.
Yeah, I'm listening.
Because honestly, this is just standard locker room sports coaching. Literally every single high-performance environment in the world uses this language.
They do. It's very common.
Right. She just wants them to work harder, find creative solutions, prioritize their time, push through client objections. It's that leave it all on the field mentality. So why is this suddenly treated as this massive compliance issue?
Because context totally alters the fundamental definition of those words.
What do you mean?
I mean, whatever it takes isn't a human resources violation on its own. Like, if you run that phrase through an email filter, it's not going to trigger an alarm, right?
Right. It's just normal business talk.
But the danger arises from the combination of that high-stakes, quota-driven environment and the complete absence of boundaries.
Ah, outcome pressure without guardrails.
Exactly. Dana provided a mandatory outcome requirement, hit the numbers, but she stripped away the guardrails regarding how that outcome should actually be achieved.
Okay, I see what you're saying. Yeah. So to an employee who is already sweating, terrified of ending up on a PIP, whatever it takes doesn't sound like, hey, be more creative with your pitches.
Not at all. It sounds like a signal about what leadership actually values above everything else.
Versus just the result.
Right. It signals that results matter significantly more than the method used to obtain them. When leaders strip away those guardrails in a pressure cooker scenario, employees hear an implicit authorization to do whatever is necessary to just survive the quarter.
Survival instinct kicks in.
Exactly. It completely overrides standard operating procedures.
Wow. Okay, but a vacuum doesn't just exist in a void, right? When Dana strips away those guardrails, it has a direct impact on the people actually holding the pen.
It always does.
So let's look at what happens when an employee actually hits a wall inside that vacuum. Let's shift over to Marcus.
The sales rep.
Right. Imagine it's 9 p.m. on the very last day of Q3. Marcus is sitting at his desk, just staring at his pipeline.
Probably completely stressed out.
Oh, absolutely panicking.
Yeah.
Because he needs exactly one more deal to hit his quota and avoid the PIP fate of his colleagues.
Right.
And the crazy thing is, he actually has a deal right on the goal line. The client verbally agreed to all the terms last Tuesday. The meeting of the minds happened. Commercially, it's a done deal.
But I'm guessing the actual signature isn't there.
Exactly. The client is traveling. They're totally unreachable. The actual physical signature on the paperwork just hasn't materialized yet.
Okay, so he's stuck.
He's stuck. And he's sitting there at 9 p.m. thinking about Dana's mandate, whatever it takes. He's thinking about those PIPs. So he makes a decision.
Let me guess. He signs it himself.
Not quite, but close. He backdates the contract to last Tuesday, the date of the verbal agreement, and he hits submit.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Now, I want to explore the psychology of that 9 p.m. moment, because Marcus tells himself a very specific lie to rationalize this.
What does he say?
He tells himself, it's basically accurate anyway.
Ah, yes. The basically accurate rationalization.
Isn't that a common one?
Incredibly common in enforcement cases.
Right.
I mean, people rarely view themselves as malicious actors, you know?
Right. They don't think they're criminals.
Exactly. Marcus is just convincing himself that the paperwork is merely a formality that's catching up to the commercial reality.
Because the client did agree on Tuesday.
Right, so writing Tuesday on the document feels to him like a minor administrative correction, not like an active deception.
And honestly, putting on my devil's advocate hat here, I can completely understand that impulse.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, put yourself in Marcus's shoes for a second. If the commercial reality actually happened on Tuesday and the company is definitely going to deliver the product anyway, why is writing Tuesday on that piece of paper such a massive sin?
Because legally...
I mean, he's not inventing a fake client. The revenue is real. To a stressed out sales rep, this just feels like a harmless shortcut.
Well, I can tell you that exact logic has been attempted by countless defense attorneys in real world enforcement actions.
And how does that usually go?
It disintegrates entirely under legal scrutiny.
Really? Entirely?
Yeah, entirely. Because at the end of the day, it is document falsification. The contract execution date is a material fact.
Okay, so the date matters that much.
It is everything. The date the signature is actually obtained is the execution date, regardless of any prior verbal agreements you had over coffee.
So because the ink dictates the reality, not the conversation.
Exactly. The execution date is the anchor point for a massive sequence of corporate obligations.
Like what?
Well, if you look at the mechanics of accounting standards, specifically ASC 606.
Oh boy, ASC 606.
Right, which governs how companies recognize revenue from contracts with customers. The core principle there is that revenue must be matched to the exact moment. Performance obligations are satisfied and control transfers.
Okay, so the date on that document determines when the company is legally allowed to claim that money on their books?
Yes. So by backdating a contract from Thursday, which is technically Q4, to Tuesday, which was Q3.
Oh, I see. Marcus is artificially dragging future cash into the present quarter.
Precisely. He is artificially inflating Q3's financial performance.
Just to hit his personal quota.
Right. And for a public company, altering dates to pull revenue forward misrepresents the organization's overall financial health to the public markets and to investors.
Wow.
So it feels like a harmless 9 p.m. administrative shortcut to Marcus can legally constitute securities fraud.
Securities fraud from one date change.
Yes.
You know, it's like changing the weight and balance numbers on a flight manifest after the plane takes off.
That is a great way to put it.
Like, it's not just a clerical error. You've corrupted the fuel calculations, the air traffic control, tracking literally every single downstream system relying on that original data is now operating completely blindly.
That is the perfect analogy. You compromise the integrity of the entire system because that single falsified date dictates when legal obligations commence, when payment terms begin, when warranty periods start.
When regulatory filings are triggered.
Exactly. The entire corporate apparatus starts acting on a lie.
Okay, but if the consequences of this are as severe as securities fraud, it raises a massive question for me about accountability.
How so?
Well, when the regulators inevitably discover this, because they always do, who actually takes the fall?
That is the million-dollar question.
Because on paper, Marcus committed the fraud, he changed the date, but Dana built the pressure cooker.
And this is where the regulatory landscape has shifted dramatically over the last few years.
Really? To address this exact dynamic?
Yes. The Department of Justice recently updated their evaluation of corporate compliance programs.
The ECCP, right?
The ECCP, yes. Prosecutors do not just isolate the rogue employee anymore.
So they don't just throw Marcus under the bus and call it a day?
Not at all. They actively and aggressively assess the management structure surrounding that employee.
I imagine they aren't just looking at Marcus's computer then.
No. To evaluate management, they are pulling Dana's emails, they're reviewing her Slack messages, they're looking at the internal performance metrics.
They're probably checking to see if the compensation structure heavily penalized small misses, right?
Exactly. Or if leadership just turned a blind eye to compliance workarounds as long as the numbers were hit.
Wow. So they look deeply into the organizational culture itself.
The culture and the incentive structures. The ECCP actually directs prosecutors to ask whether leadership established a pressure environment that predictably facilitated fraud.
Predictably facilitated. That is a heavy phrase.
It is. They evaluate the tone at the top and, critically here, the tone in the middle.
Meaning mid-level managers like Dana.
Right. Because even though Dana never explicitly directed Marcus to backdate a contract...
She never said change the date.
She never said it. But her mandate of whatever it takes created the permission structure for it.
Wow.
And because of the DOJ's intense focus on individual accountability right now, supervisors who cultivate these environments can face personal, civil, and in some cases, even criminal liability.
So Dana is personally on the hook.
She shares responsibility for the conditions that made the falsification feel necessary to her employee.
Which honestly brings us to what I think is the most insidious part of this entire scenario for anyone listening who is in management.
What's that?
Dana never knew.
Right. She had no idea.
The gap between her intent and his reception was entirely invisible to her. I mean, think about it. The client eventually signed the paperwork.
Right. The deal closed.
The Q3 numbers looked better, and Dana probably went to sleep that night thinking she was a highly effective leader.
She assumed her tough love motivational speech worked perfectly.
Exactly. Because Marcus isn't going to send an email the next morning saying, "Hey, Dana, per your whatever it takes instruction, I committed a little light securities fraud last night."
No, he is going to bury that action as deeply as he possibly can.
Right. So leaders consistently evaluate their own effectiveness based on what they intended to say, completely blind to what was actually heard on the floor.
And because these desperate actions are hidden, the consequences of outcome pressure just compound over time in the dark.
And if whatever it takes is your baseline culture, it's never just one Marcus, is it?
No, it never is.
You don't just get one backdated contract. You get an entire sales floor learning that manipulating the pipeline is the only way you survive the quarterly review.
You get what's called a systemic normalization of deviance.
Oh, that sounds bad. It's terrible. It means widespread backdating, falsified pipeline reporting, side letters with clients that alter terms without any legal review.
The culture basically learns that compliance is optional when the stakes are high.
Exactly. And it all stays entirely invisible to regional leadership until an external audit or a whistleblower or an SEC inquiry just blows the doors off the organization.
Man, that is just the genesis of so many massive revenue recognition scandals.
In companies where the leadership genuinely believed they were simply driving high performance.
It is incredibly sobering. So since this risk is basically invisible to the leader and so easily rationalized by the employee using that basically accurate lie, how do we actually dismantle this trap?
We need practical solutions. Right. And Excellus frames this as finding the choice B alternatives for both parties.
Okay, let's look at Marcus first.
What do they call a decision-ready employee actually do in that 9 p.m. moment?
Well, choice A was backdating, which is fraud. Choice C, which honestly often gets ignored, is simply submitting the obdurate date in Q4, missing quota, and just taking the punishment.
Which doesn't help the company's Q3 goals either.
Right, so the actual correct path, choice B, requires transparency and escalation.
Meaning Marcus has to submit the contract with today's date, the actual date of the signature.
Yes.
But he can't just toss it over the fence and hope for the best, right? He needs to escalate the situation to Dana to explain the commercial reality.
Exactly. Like, "Hey, Dana, the verbal agreement happened on Tuesday, but the paperwork is arriving today."
Right.
Furthermore, a decision-ready employee actively seeks out legitimate corporate processes.
What does that look like in practice?
Marcus should ask if there is an approved mechanism to record the verbal agreement without falsifying the execution date.
Do companies actually have that?
Many organizations have established processes for this exact scenario.
Oh, really?
Yeah, things like specific contract notes, addendums, or internal memorandums that legitimately document a prior oral agreement for the commercial team's credit while still preserving the factual integrity of the legal execution date.
Oh, that's brilliant. So choice B routes a complex reality back to leadership and allows the organization to solve the problem legally.
It completely removes the burden of legal interpretation from a stressed out sales rep who's just working late on a deadline.
That makes total sense. Now, what about the leader?
Right, Dana's turn.
How does Dana prevent this invisible trap from opening up in the first place? Because the solution here is actually remarkably simple, but it requires strict discipline on her part.
What is it?
She must pair her outcome expectation with an explicit boundary in the exact same breath.
In the same breath. So the proximity of the boundary to the demand is what makes it effective.
Yes, you absolutely cannot separate them. So here is the two-sentence guardrail script.
Okay, let's hear it.
Instead of just stopping at whatever it takes, she needs to say, I need closed deals this quarter. Push hard. Be creative. Work the pipeline.
Okay, so she establishes the pressure and the expectation there.
Right, but then immediately sentence two. And do it the right way. No backdating, no promises we can't keep, no shortcuts that create problems on the back end.
Wow. It's such a brilliant cognitive intervention.
Isn't it?
Yeah, because you maintain the high performance expectation, you're still demanding results, but you actively close off the permission to falsify interpretation before the employee can even construct it in their mind.
Exactly. You remove that ambiguity that breeds rationalizations like basically accurate.
You shut it down immediately.
And what I find so compelling about this solution is that it takes exactly 10 seconds.
Just 10 seconds.
10 seconds of oxygen to close a gap that could otherwise trigger an SEC inquiry. Like 10 seconds to protect your career, your team, and your company's reputation.
It just emphasizes that true leadership isn't just pointing at a destination on a map and demanding the team get there.
Right.
True leadership requires defining the destination while simultaneously defining the acceptable paths to reach it.
Because if you only provide the destination,
you are abandoning your team to navigate the ethical minefield completely alone.
So what does this mean for you listening right now, whether you are a regional VP leading a division of hundreds or you are an individual contributor just trying to hit your own targets this week? You have to be hyper aware of this dynamic.
Because outcome pressure without guardrails is basically a ticking time bomb.
It really is.
And if you are the one holding the pen, remember Marcus's trap. The phrase basically accurate is almost always a red flag for a material compliance violation.
Such a good point.
If you find yourself thinking that, just stop. Escalate the issue. Rely on the legitimate processes.
Absolutely. Now, I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over today.
Give it to us.
Think about the last time you gave or received a high-pressure, do-or-die mandate at work.
We've all been there.
We have. And if the team miraculously hit the target the very next day, are you absolutely sure you should be celebrating?
Oh, that's a chilling thought.
Or did you just unknowingly authorize your first compliance failure? Keep those guardrails up, and we'll catch you next time on the Deep Dive.